Major Williams, Reel 1. Whereabouts were you born, please?
I was born in Liverpool in 1918.
What did your father do for a living?
He, at that time, was in the army. He was a major in the tank corps. And he married my mother in 17. And since she came from Liverpool, when I was born, that just happened to be a natural place for her to be with her parents.
Where were you educated?
Initially, I was at an elementary school in Walsall, and then ultimately Wolverhampton Grammar School. Then from there, I went to the technical college, the South Staffordshire Technical College, and it was from there that I joined the Territorial Royal Army.
When was that?
That was in the tail end of 1938, the winter of 38-39. I joined the Staffordshire Yeomanry, which had a squadron in Wolverhampton, two squadrons in Wolverhampton. And my intention at that time was ultimately to apply for a commission in the South Staffordshire Regiment. It was thought at that time also that it would be a useful introduction to the Territorial Army to serve as a trooper in the yeomanry for a period of a year or 18 months.
What was the attitude of your employer to your being in the TA?
Rather neutral, I think, at the time. In industry at that time, holidays were not paid for, and for me to have a fortnight's camp, I think they thought that I was trying one on. They did not dissuade me, but they didn't encourage.
Where were you employed?
I was employed as I was training to be a production engineer at that time, and I was working for a lock manufacturing company, Albert Marston, in Wolverhampton. Albert Marston was an old established business, and when I undertook this training as a production engineer at the Technical College, a part of the training requirement was that I should be employed by a manufacturing company. So it was a sandwich course, partly or mainly, I think, working for my employer, but working evening studies and occasional days at the Technical College.
What had impelled you to join the TA?
I think a feeling that there was a grave danger, as we saw it, that we would be at war with Germany sometime, and it might be as well to get in on the ground, as it were, in some formation of our choosing. You may remember that shortly after 38, there was the introduction of a form of national service, and that, although we didn't know exactly what form it would take, that was at least being talked about, and we wanted, or at least the people who I was with in friendship, decided that we'd join the Staffordshire Yeomanry because it seemed a better choice than being directed to some other unit. So we volunteered to join the Yeomanry.
What did you think of the training and experience you had of the TA before the war with regard to preparing you for what was to come in wartime?
Well, looking back now, it was quite clearly ludicrous. The thing that probably helped enormously was the beginning of loyalty to a unit, which I think is endemic in the British Army more so than any other army. We became very proud of being Staffordshire Yeomanry, but our training was on horses, and one can't imagine that that had much relevance in the last war. We trained in the use of sword, and we were really mounted infantry. That was our main function. The only camp I went to was the 39 camp, where I volunteered to become trained as a farrier, a shoesmith. And when war broke out, it was in that training that I continued for some months before ultimately we went out to Palestine.
How and why did that come about?
What,
going to Palestine?
Well, there was the cavalry division, which consisted of 9 regiments, all mounted, 6 of them yeomanry, and 3 were regular, the Greys, the Royal Dragoons, and a composite regiment of Household Cavalry. All the other regiments in this division were yeomanry regiments. And I think we were sent out to Palestine, as I understood it at the time, on more of a policing nature, because at that time, I suppose, the Syrian frontier, which was shared with the French, was believed should be secured, and the eastern boundaries of Palestine, as it then was, territory administered by this country for the League of Nations. There was, incidentally, a fair amount of internal problems in Palestine itself between the Arabs, who had been there for hundreds of years, and the emerging numbers of Jews who were going there from Europe. And so these Jewish settlements had got to be protected against Arab forces. And so that was, generally, that was the situation as I understood it. In fact, I don't think that anything we did in those days contributed very much to the war effort as in Europe at all.
Did you personally have any internal security duties in Palestine in 39?
No. I left, or my regiment left England in the winter of 39. We took 700 horses out with us. And as a farrier, I was left behind in Marseille, which was our departure port in France, to look after sick and injured horses that so we followed on the regiment in the end of January, beginning of February 40. When we arrived there, we were involved with a lot of training and showing the flag, really, to show that there was a fairly strong disciplined force there, which would discourage what was clearly an internal problem in Palestine between the Jews and Arabs. I think it was our presence there that helped, rather than we didn't actually become involved in any face-to-face conflict with either Jews or Arabs. The but about this is that almost immediately afterwards, that was the June, July, when France capitulated, the French in Syria joined the Vichy forces. And so immediately we then had a frontier with an enemy country. And the French forces in Syria, particularly the French Foreign Legion, mounted French Foreign Legion, were marauding into Palestine and thieving cattle and generally causing mayhem. And the Staffordshire Yeomanry was in fact involved in one action in which I didn't take part, and against French forces, and we took a number of them prisoner. And their horses as well. An interesting sidelight there is that in British cavalry, all horses are either mares or geldings. In the French Foreign Legion, most of their horses are stallions. And you can just imagine the problems that existed when we were trying to picket these stallions among our own horses that were all mares or rigs. Some of the mares on in season, and all the stallions really raring to get at them. And the first casualties that we experienced was due to a whole horse line of Arab stallions ripping their heel ropes and getting among the mares, and two of the line guards were killed, trampled over. That was in July 1940, yes.
You were in the Staffordshire Yeomanry. Did the unit have a more specific name? Did it have a number?
No, it was... Its full title was the Queen's Own Royal Regiment of Staffordshire Yeomanry. There were quite a number of... Nearly all counties had a yeomanry regiment in those days, but very few of them remained horsed after the outbreak of war. Most of them either became gunners or signals regiments or armoured regiments. And indeed, that's what happened to the Staffordshire Yeomanry after I left them, and I'll come back to that in a moment. They ultimately became an armoured regiment and acquitted themselves magnificently on the desert at Al Alamein. In fact, Montgomery, who used to wear that bush hat with the badges of so many different regiments in it, you know, so that he associated himself with as many regiments as he could crowd badges on. In fact, the place of honour was the badge of the Staffordshire Yeomanry.
On his berry?
Not his berry. He wore a... he's known for his berry, principally, but in those days he used to wear an Australian bush hat. You may have seen photographs of him with us. Anyway, that's going on a bit. I left the Staffordshire Yeomanry in July, the end of July 1940. It had been designated as a what was called a semi-officer producing unit, and there were about 200 soldiers of the Staffordshire Yeomanry who were known as potential officers, and I just happened to be one of them. After I suppose March 1940, an OCTU, an Officer Career Training Unit, was opened in Cairo. And the first intake was May, and I went in July to Cairo to be trained as an officer. So my service with the Staffordshire Yeomanry sort of finished before they became mechanized.
And you got a commission in the 1st Battalion South Staffordshire?
That's right, yes. I was commissioned to the South Staffordshire Regiment, who had a battalion on the desert, the 1st Battalion, which was a regular battalion. And I joined them in October 1940.
Whereabouts did you join them?
Mersham Matruh.
Can you describe what the setup was there when you joined them?
Well, the whole of the battalion was dug into all their accommodation was below ground level. It was all very strange to me. I just arrived when this wave of offensive had just begun. And so there was a fair amount of confusion as far as I was concerned, a newly joined officer. I was attached to one company, then then to another, and I was really a bit of a spare file for two or three weeks. And shortly after the start of that offensive, you may recall that there were some formations which are known, familiarly known as jock columns, which consisted of a mixture of infantry, gunners. There was a troop of 25 pounders, a company of infantry, a platoon of Vickers machine gunners, and these were held to be fairly strongly armed and very mobile units. The infantry were lorry-borne, and they were supported. The particular one that was formed from the Staffords was supported, or had the Navy in support, this strangely. There was a gunboat that was known as the Terror, and a Monitor. No, the Monitor was the Terror. I forget the name of the gunboat. And they were going up the African coast, and our particular column, or the Staffords' particular column, was giving directions, acting as an OP, directions for the fire of these. The Monitor is really just a floating gun platform, as you probably know. And the Terror had two, either 16 or 18 inch guns. Guns that were made before the First World War, and they just kept on pumping these shells over, and there's no doubt about it that they put the fear of God into the Italians, because they sounded rather like an express train going over, and they had an enormous bursting power. So that was part of the support that this particular column had, and although I didn't know at the time, but there was a camera unit out on the desert, and you may recall in the film Desert Victory seeing a long column of Italian prisoners of war being led by what appeared to be a 1,500-weight truck, and anyway, not many British soldiers about. Well, those were Staffords. And the job that I was involved with was merely the securing of these prisoners as they came back. We went back to Railhead, which was at Merseymetru, and took them in trains back to the canal area.
What was the demeanour of the prisoners?
Very friendly. They were a bit downcast. They were not particularly enthusiastic about the role that they had to play, and I don't think they felt that they had been sufficiently informed about either the tenacity or the ability of the British Army there, because it was, I think, their propaganda had held us to be a sort of contemptible little army, rather like that in the First World War. There were literally tens of thousands of prisoners. It was an unbelievable sight.
Did you ever speak personally to any of them?
Oh, yes. In fact, when back in the Delta area, when one of my jobs was to build containment areas in which we would have perhaps 1,000 or 1,500 prisoners, was to discover who could speak English among them and appoint them as contact people and feed them. They were very well treated, there was no question about that. And a personal servant. It was a man who attached himself to me. His Christian name was Tony, obviously. but whatever I thought I needed, he was always there to act as a bit of a runner. So through him, I came to know several prisoners only just fleetingly. And some of them were actually born in Scotland. I met two Italian prisoners of war who were the children of Italians who had emigrated to Scotland and had gone back to see their grandparents in Italy and had been mustered into the forces because of their parentage. And there was one particular one I remember who could hardly speak Italian and spoke English with a very broad Scottish accent. He probably put it on a bit in order to sort of get special treatment.
Were the Italians who worked for you reliable, or did any of them try to sabotage?
No. As I recall it, I had about a platoon strength, probably about 24, 30 men, and we were just patrolling round the perimeters of this prisoner of war camp. Well, it's not really a prisoner of war camp as such, it was just an area in the desert. But they were all given tents, they were well fed, they were treated with respect. No question about it. There was no strong antagonism between us at all. If perhaps we were a little contemptuous of them, I suppose that was understandable, that they had, in their vast numbers, had given up to such a relatively small force. But they were perfectly happy. Perfectly happy.
Was there any recalcitrant element amongst them?
No. Not that I was aware of. There may well have been, but I didn't come across it.
Coming back to the jock column system, why was it necessary to have such a system when there was a traditional battalion and regimental system of fighting?
Well, the desert, you can imagine the desert as being a sea, almost. It's almost featureless. There are no, or except along the coastal strip, there are no settled villages or towns. And the question of communications were really just, you made your own tracks across the desert. If I may just say here that the Sahara Desert, a lot of it in that part of of Africa, is very hard. It's not like the rolling sand dunes that you see in films of the Foreign Legion. You get that in the Katara Depression, but apart from that, which the Katara Depression is a sea of soft sand about 15 or 20 miles from the coast. But other than that, it's very hard, and it's you can drive over it. You need special talents in navigation, obviously, because you've got to treat it as though it was a sea. And the only way in which the sort of more traditional forces could be used, I suppose, would be in this way, to form them into highly mobile units. And I think that, though I have no reason to know any more than I'm saying now, that it was probably the intention that there should have been more jock columns formed, but the first numbers that were penetrating the Italian lines was a sufficiency, because at that time, almost historic advance of Wavell just went on rolling across the desert from Mersa Matruh, Sidi Barani, and so on, ultimately to Tobruk. And this could not have been achieved other than by very mobile forces. It wasn't anything like the Alamein battles that later on characterized desert warfare.
Now, can we go on to Burma, and can you tell me how you came to be a Chindit?
Well, in 1942, when Japan came into the war, the Staffords were in the 70th British Division, which, with one exception, were all regular battalions, regular army battalions. And initially, we were sent to, or we were going to Rangoon. And before we got to Rangoon, Rangoon had fallen. So the disposition of the division was then through India. But in the first instance, it was going to Burma, straight from Egypt to Burma. And indeed, our armoured unit, the 7th Armoured Brigade, had already landed in Rangoon and fought a long and bitter rearguard action all the way up the spine of Burma. So there we were. We were landed in Bombay, and my brigade, the Essex, the 4th Borders, and that was the only non-regular battalion. 4th Borders were a territorial battalion. 1st Essex, 1st South Staffords, and 4th Borders, 23 Brigade. We were, in the first instance, sent to Pune, which is about 120 miles up country from Bombay. When we were in Pune, for a few weeks, I think we were there possibly about 6 weeks, we were just carrying on ordinary, quite elementary training, although most of the men had experienced action, no less. We kept up training, marches, kept active, with really nothing else to do except train until they decided where we were going to go. And ultimately, after that 6 weeks, we then went, the whole brigade went to a place called Kunti, better spell that, K-H-U-N-T-I, in the state of Bihar, in central India. And that was a heavily forested area, and we were there training hard, not knowing really what our function was going to be, except ultimately as a reactive counterattacking force should there be an invasion of India. Because the position in Burma was extremely dire at that time. You may recall that the British Army received a hell of a licking in Burma, partly because they were not used to the living off the